Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books. My guest is Joe Yogurst, the writer, editor, photographer, and he's out with a new National Geographic book, 100 Drives, 5,000 Ideas, Where to Go, When to Go, What to Do, What to See. That's a long title. It's a collection of photographs and descriptions of journeys along some of the most compelling roadways in North America. Joe, the idea of a family road trip seems to be an event from a bygone era, from when, you know, back when America was in its infancy. But we all remember the Griswolds' trip to Wally World, but I was surprised to read that road trips are still very popular.
Road trips are still immensely popular, and I certainly grew up on them in the 60s and 70s with my family, and I've introduced them to my own kids starting in the 90s and the aughts and the teens of this century. So I think they're very much still in vogue. I think primarily because they're easy to do. You know, you don't have to make a plane reservation or go through an airport. You don't have to jump on a ship or a train. You just basically jump in the car, take out your GPS or a map, fill up the tank, and take off to someplace cool.
And that's the beauty of it these days with GPS. But when you see people take road trips, are they generally within a certain, you know, a few hundred miles of where they live? Or what's the more popular thing to do with road trips, distance?
I think that a lot of people take regional road trips that are fairly close to home in neighboring states or their own state. But every once in a while, they want to do the epic trip, drive across America, drive across Canada, whatever the case might be, drive from Chicago to Miami and from Boston to Chicago. So every once in a while, you need to do the epic trip. But I think most people who like road trips probably do a regional trip maybe once a year.
And you've divided North America in the book into 8 separate regions of the continent, and so it's something that everybody can pick up from where they live. But as I look through, there's photographs in here. Did you shoot all or any of the photographs?
No, those are not mine.
Okay.
Every single word is mine, but none of the photographs. Those are drawn from 130 years of National Geographic archives and the photographers that have shot for them over the years.
The photographs I look at, some are beautiful nature scenes, some are indoors at a museum or whatever, but, and I'm sure you know this from having shot photos in the past, when you set up these photographs, there's certain times of day that work for these types of things, and so sometimes it seems like I see a photograph of something, and then when I go visit it, it doesn't look like Nat Geo published it.
Well, a lot of that depends on the weather, and you're right, the time of day. If you're shooting in that really soft light of early morning or late afternoon, things tend to look a lot better than they do in the bright sunshine of the middle of the day or if it's gray and overcast. So those are big factors.
What were some of the obvious road trips that you wanted to make sure you included in this book?
Well, there's famous ones. I mean, Route 66 is the first one that comes to mind, but also Big Sur, California Highway 1 along the coast there. And those are kind of the two, I would think, most obvious ones. But after that, some of the other ones that are... Trans-Canada, of course, because Canada is included in this book, too. If you're a Canadian or if you're an American who spends a lot of time there, driving the Trans-Canadian Highway is an epic route. The Alaska Highway is another one, getting from Alberta to Alaska. And so there's things like that that kind of have to go into the book.
Are there certain road trips that are better in the summertime rather than the winter? And I don't mean the obvious ones, like you don't want to drive through Iowa in the middle of winter, but you know, the Highway 1 in California, is there a certain beauty about that in the wintertime that you can't find in the summertime or vice versa?
Well, assuming that it's not raining, I think it's actually nicer in the winter because there's less people driving the route. If you get these bright blue sky days along that coast, like I had a couple of months ago when I drove up there, it's just incredible in the winter. The summer, you can get fog. It'll be warmer. It won't be rainy, but you can get fog along that coast, and the views aren't nearly as good. So it seems counterintuitive to not go in the summer, but I would really suggest that you, if you're going to drive Highway 1 or the Oregon coast or the Washington coast, I would say go in the dead of winter or go in the spring or fall, but try to avoid the summer when it's warmer, but not so pretty.
One of the things that I liked about your book is that you list some books within the book about certain areas of the country, and one of my favorite books of all time is Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil, and you have that in your chapter about going through Georgia and Tennessee. So as you sit back and look, you know, you take this at a little bit higher level than face value, because there's what you see on the trip, and then there's the artistic portion of it. How much does that artistic portion, thinking about those books that have been written about these regions, add to your experience?
I think it adds a lot. I've always been the type that likes to read a book that's set in the place where I'm going while I'm actually traveling there. And that's true of international travel or travel in the U.S. and Canada. I think it really adds to the experience. Several things, actually, not just books, but I kind of like to get the music of the place and play that while I'm going, too. Way back when, it was a cassette tape, and then it became a CD, and, you know, now it's your iPod, and plug that in, but or Apple Music. But I think music adds a lot to it. You know, driving through southern Louisiana doing the Cajun Highway, I was playing Cajun music the whole time and swamp rock and things like that. And that really kind of, to me, adds to the atmosphere. But certainly books do. And also, I highly recommend trying to catch a movie of places that you're going, whether it's a documentary film by Ken Burns or someone, or it's a feature film.
Something else I learned about myself as I read this book is how myopic I can get about where I live, because you have a chapter about driving through Iowa, silos and smokestacks. Yeah. When I drive through Iowa, I think it's the most boring drive in the world, but you really slowed it down for me, and I take for granted so much of the things you see.
That was one of my big surprises in putting together the drives, I think. You know, I grew up on the West Coast. I grew up with my parents and my family doing road trips all over the Western U.S. and Canada. And I spent, because I'm in, you know, media, publishing, magazines and books, I've spent a lot of time in Washington and New York. But I'd never seen a lot of the Midwest. And doing this book gave me a chance to discover places that I never would have gone otherwise. And I'm always surprised that wherever you go, there's something interesting, no matter what state it's in, almost no matter what city, and any road that you go down, you're going to find something interesting.
You also, in the book, you kind of describe some of these routes, and you suggest places to see, places to eat, places to, you know, do things other than sightsee. But as I thought about this, I've got friends that take these trips on motorcycles, in cars, in RVs. Is there a preferable way to see certain areas on motorcycle with camping, or, you know, you just use the motor transportation that you're most comfortable with?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I've always been a car driver. I've been on motorcycles, but in strange places like Greece, not in the U.S. And I've never rented an RV, believe it or not. I'm a tried-and-true car guy. I started with a 1964 Dodge Dart with a push-button transmission and graduated to a Ford Pinto and then eventually got an MG sports car, a soft top. And so I've always hit the road in different types of vehicles, and that's been my motor transport. So I can't really speak. I mean, RVs and motorcycles are a whole kind of different ball game. I mean, you can take this book and do these routes, but there are probably a dozen magazines dedicated to RV travel across the U.S. and Canada, and probably an equal number dedicated to bike travel. So I would never want to speak for those people because it's a specialty. The roads that they want to go on, the places they want to stay, mine really is... It's for anyone who wants to hit the road, but it's really more focused on people who are doing it in their automobile.
And it seems like some of these routes have their own personalities. And for instance, when I read about the Pan American Highway from Texas to Minnesota, 1,700 miles, I never thought about a drive from Texas to Minnesota. I've driven through Minnesota, I've driven through Texas, but you don't think to put all those together. So that's sort of an innovative way you've done that. So what does that add when you add all these different locations?
Well, National Geographic pretty much gave me free rein to fill this book out how I wanted in terms of picking the routes and filling them in. And I wanted, to, I mean, like I said, you had to have the obvious ones like Route 66, and there's other ones that are based on American history or Canadian history and based on culture, things like that. But I really wanted to dig deeper and include some things that were not so obvious. And I also wanted to let my imagination run wild and come up with some things that were kind of off the wall. And the Pan American Highway is that actually comes from my own history with National Geographic. The very first book I ever did with them in 1999 was driving the Pan American Highway from Texas to Argentina, and which was a year-long project. But I thought, well, you know, it continues north of the border from Laredo northward. It goes to Canada, and technically speaking, going all the way to Alaska as part of the Pan American Highway. So I thought, I bet not a lot of people know that you can drive the Pan American Highway across the United States. So that was one of the ones I wanted to include. But I also tried to think of some of these other long drives with multi-states that weren't so obvious, that weren't, you know, my own creations. There's a Jurassic drive that's really dinosaur-focused that goes from Alberta, Canada, to Denver, Colorado, through Montana, Wyoming, and Utah, stopping at all of the top dinosaur digs and dinosaur museums in those five places. And I also have an alien highway, which is probably the most off-the-wall one, and it goes from Marfa, Texas, famous for the Marfa lights, to Roswell, to the Vast Array, to Snowflake, Arizona, where the most famous alien abduction in American history allegedly took place, on to Rachel, Nevada, and Area 52. And so that's the alien highways. I also, if you remember the Cannonball Run, that old 1970s movie with Burt Reynolds, There's a drive that follows the route of the original Cannonball Run, which was actually a competitive race across country that was run in the early 70s and that inspired that movie and the whole series of movies that came out. So those kind of multi-state, little bit offbeat drives are really a big part of this book.
Well, it's just an amazing collection of routes and photographs, and you know the narrative you've put with them just brings it all so much. The book is 100 Drives, 5,000 Ideas, where to go, when to go, what to see, what to do. Those questions are all answered in this book. And Joe Yogerst, thank you so much for your time and explaining this all to us.
Thanks for having me, Brian. I really appreciate it.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.